The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation, committed to excellence in journalism, and by the Frontline Journalism Fund, with major support from John and Joanne Hagler.
Support for Frontline Dispatch comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, dedicated to providing compassionate care and cancer specialists who are experienced in the cancer you have. When you hear the word cancer, their team is ready. Learn more at massgeneral.org/cancer.
Wash your hands, stay clean, and avoid contact with those who are sick. If you need medical attention, please contact your local medical facility before arriving. Again, this is the Navajo Police Department. To help contain the spread of the COVID-19, please stay at home, shelter in place.
This type of message has become a regular part of patrol for the Navajo Police Department. That's because the Navajo Nation is seeing a higher rate of confirmed COVID-19 cases than most states. And in Native American communities across the country, there are reports of shortages of necessary medical supplies and critical care beds for patients. What's more, tribes say that their requests for federal help are being ignored.
It's hard to open a daily email and see that cases on the Navajo Nation jump by, 20-30 overnight.
That's New Mexico PBS reporter Antonia Gonzalez. Antonia has been covering the coronavirus outbreak in Native American communities and is a member of the Navajo Nation herself. Frontline's partnering with her as part of our local journalism initiative. I'm Rainey Aronson, executive producer of Frontline, and this is the Frontline Dispatch.
The Frontline Dispatch is made possible by the Abrams Foundation, committed to excellence in journalism, and by the WGBH Catalyst Fund. Support for the Frontline Dispatch also comes from the Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center. Early detection is key to catching and treating many cancers. You can learn more about the innovative programs at massgeneral.org/cancer. Mass General Cancer Center. Every day amazing.
Hey, Antonia, where are you calling us from?
I'm in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in my house safely being, social distancing.
Sheltering in?
Yes, I haven't really been anywhere. If we need some essential supplies, just one person goes out and we're wearing our mask and gloves and keeping a safe distance from other people.
Right. We're all in that situation. It's kind of amazing. I'm also calling you from my basement. So here we are. Antonia, I know that there was a call last month where the Indian Health Services shared some alarming information about shortages of medical supplies, and in particular, its ICU and hospital bed capacity. And one official even called it reportedly a shoestring operation. Can you take us back to that call and help us understand where things stood as the virus spread?
Yeah, a lot of our tribal nations already deal with critically underfunded Indian Health Service programs. A lot of tribal communities, maybe they live in rural areas, so they don't have that quick access to a hospital. Maybe some tribes have some tribal clinics. And then on top of that, a lot of Native people are facing some chronic illnesses such as diabetes, heart disease, and some other illnesses that are making them, as we hear from health professionals across the country, make people more susceptible to the diseases.
Right. So, I was hoping you could help us understand the IHS in general. Why is it so short on supplies? This is a systemic issue.
Yeah, so the Indian Health Service, the federal government has a treaty and trust responsibility to tribes across the country to provide health care. And it's just been a long-standing issue going back years and years and years. And when we look at some of the different tribes, for example, the Navajo Nation, which is hit hard, it's one of the largest tribes in the United States, has 27,000 square miles. And for the people that live there, there are about 12 Indian Health Service facilities to serve the Navajo people, which includes some in the border towns. And so people often have to travel miles just to be seen.
We've seen even well-resourced hospitals low on PPE, low on ventilators. Can you paint a picture for me of what's going on inside the IHS hospitals and how they're doing for supplies?
So recent press releases from the Indian Health Service has indicated that they've really been working on getting funding and needs to different tribal nations, including looking at some of those much needed medical supplies. As far as some of the tribes, including the Navajo Nation, other people have reached out. We have reported on Tuesday the Navajo health officials are saying that they've received test kits from a university in Arizona. They've received N95 masks from various different business organizations. And what they're saying their need is now is for medical gowns and then also a drive for masks for the public.
Antonia, I know you're based in New Mexico. Can you talk to us about the first reporting that you did on this and what was your focus?
So I think when it first started coming out, we started talking to different tribal leaders in different areas of the country about what their plans were before any of the cases came. And then when cases started popping up here and there, talking to the tribes about what they were doing. In New Mexico, we have that not only do we have the Navajo Nation, but we also have Apache tribes, and we have 19 Pueblo communities here in the state of New Mexico. And some of the first things that Pueblos here were doing was closing off their reservation to visitors and to help slow that spread of COVID-19. So we saw a lot of tourism destinations closing. Every single casino in New Mexico, according to the governor, is closed.
Talk to me a little bit about the casinos closing. What do they feel the sort of long-term economic impact will be?
So I think that a lot of tribes are trying to figure that out right now. There are tribes all over the country. I haven't heard of one tribe that is still operating its casino. Likely that is happening, but we saw casinos in Oklahoma close. Like I said, here in New Mexico, all the casinos closed. A lot in California, a lot of the casinos closed. And so this is going on, 3 weeks or more that these places have closed. And for gaming tribes, I think a lot of tribes do rely on gaming dollars. They're trying to figure out how they can be included in stimulus plans. And so I think that I'm seeing a lot of tribal leaders and a lot of Native organizations, including the National Congress of American Indians. There's also different gaming associations that work with tribes that are looking to see how they can recover from this, including the Navajo Nation, which operates casinos in Arizona and in New Mexico.
Let's talk specifically about one of the largest tribes in the U.S., the Navajo Nation. We understand that they have one of the highest infection rates in the country. Can you talk a bit about their experience of the pandemic so far?
Navajo Nation leaders, Navajo health officials, Navajo emergency responders, the tribe really took information about COVID-19 seriously from the start.
This is a new virus. It is right now originating or reported from China. There are 5 cases in the United States and 1 is in Maricopa County. There is no vaccine.
And then into February, March, tribal leaders really took this issue seriously and they started preparing as much as they could for COVID-19, including trying to find different areas where they could set up field hospitals, which they have found places now in both Arizona and New Mexico. They started emergency orders right away with the sheltering in place. They started putting some of the information in both the Navajo and English languages, doing radio ads and putting stuff on billboards. So they really took the approach of taking this seriously. And then with testing and more testing being made available, we saw that the numbers just kept increasing. And as of Tuesday, the Navajo Nation President Jonathan Nez was talking about more rapid tests coming to the tribe. And so they're just seeing how this may impact with the increase in numbers.
Right. So why do you believe that the numbers are so much higher?
Yeah. So what the tribal officials and the Navajo health departments are saying is that because they have increased the testing, that's why they are seeing a lot of these increased numbers. And so they're really still urging people to stay at home and follow the emergency orders the Navajo health departments did say that they're seeing flattening of the curve, and so tribal officials are keeping these emergency orders in place. They've beefed up some of them, including a 57-hour weekend curfews, which started on Easter, and police are out, and they're issuing citations for those who are not following the orders. They also are continuing the shelter in place, but also what they're doing is asking people when they go out in public to wear the masks. And their government is closed, and they're continuing to close the government through May 17th.
I know that you spoke with President Nez. What does he say about the federal government response, and how helpful has the federal government been at this point with the Navajo Nation?
We've heard from President Nez say multiple times in his town halls and on press calls that the federal government has really lacked in responsibility to getting the funding and working with the tribes, especially when it comes to getting immediate funding needs to the Navajo Nation.
Federal agencies are using the same process that has been used every year, such as forcing us to apply via grant applications, which places on us hefty reporting requirements. Jumping through all these hoops, all the tribal leaders have been advocating for direct funding to tribal governments for a very, very long time. And this is an emergency. And this statistic needs to be given, is that of all the cases throughout the Indian Health Service, 57%, the last number I got, 57% of the total within IHS are from the Navajo Nation.
You know, I've been covering Indian country issues, tribes, for more than 15 years now. And it's the same story, it seems like, when it comes to working with the federal government and honoring treaty and trust responsibilities, and really regardless in who's in office. But you see that tribal leaders, advocates, heads of national native organizations, they continually advocate for their people. They're you know, before COVID, and I'm sure after COVID.
So I know, Antonio, that you're a member of the Navajo Nation yourself. What has it been like for you to cover this, not just as a journalist, but someone who's also part of this community?
I think that, you know, when I step back and, you know, take it in, I think it's like what I'm hearing from a lot of journalists across the country is just how overwhelmed it can feel at times, and especially in covering something like this when it comes so close to people you care about, your tribe, your family, people, you know, that are dealing with this and being hard hit, that you know, it's hard. It's hard to open a daily email and see that cases on the Navajo Nation jump by, you know, 20, 30 overnight. So I think that that's a toll. And just knowing that, you know, what conditions are like, and, you know, knowing how these communities are being impacted, and also just, I think, the social and mental toll that it's having on people as well. But then again, I'm also grateful that, you know, my family and my friends and people that I care about and love are safe and are taking this serious.
I wanted to ask you, just looking back at the long history of Native tribes dealing with crises in general, what do you see as a bright spot? What gives you hope and optimism around this?
I think looking at our younger generations, young people, you know, are some of the smartest people in some of our tribal communities when it comes to a variety of levels. We see that from youth across the country.
Hello, my name is Gabriel. I am from Los Angeles. I'm going to be dancing for the people struggling from the coronavirus.
I'm of the Halawa Saponi people, and I live in Hollister, North Carolina. I come to you all today as your 2019-2020 Miss Halawa Saponi Princess, and I will be promoting my platform, Reconnecting with Our Elders.
We're dancing for our elders, healing, praying, and bravery.
Gwe, segon, sewa gwe gong. Hello everyone, my name is Mike. I hope everyone is well and staying safe out here. To all my essential workers, do what you gotta do, come back home. I gotta do the exact same thing. Come home safe. All right. And to those stuck at home, you know, this will be over soon. Appreciate the times that you have together, because you may not get this time back. You know, we'll resume normalcy pretty soon, I hope. Anywho, Nyawa, which means thank you, Unagiwahi. Goodbye for now.
We see different youth groups and young people who have, you know, not only taken to social media to encourage their peers and to share their culture and language and tradition, but we also see different groups that are helping in any way they can, whether it's making face masks, or we've reported on some stories of volunteers in Rapid City, South Dakota, making care packages for elders and leaving them at the doors. Also volunteers in Rapid City who harvest traditional herbs for smudging and for teas, taking those to elders in the community during this time to provide some sort of comfort. And so I think we're seeing the resilience of our Indigenous communities during this time. So I think that the resilience, history of Indigenous peoples here across the United States and around the world, is the resilience continues to shine even in the hardest of times.
Antonio, we're so grateful for the partnership with New Mexico PBS and with you, and we'll be talking to you soon. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Support for the Frontline Dispatch comes from Mass General Cancer Center. When facing the unknown, it is often the small acts of courage that we experience in our daily lives that power us to face another day. We're all in this together.
Frontline is supporting New Mexico PBS's coronavirus coverage as part of our local journalism initiative. You can find Antonia's reporting and more of our pandemic coverage online at frontline.org. This podcast was produced by James Edwards and Max Green. Our production assistant is Lucy Sullivan. Catherine Greiwert is our editorial coordinating producer. Pam Johnson is Frontline Senior Director of Strategy and Audience. Laura Nizel is Senior Story Editor. Phil Bennett is our Special Projects Editor. Sarah Childress is our Senior Editor. And Andrew Metz is our Managing Editor. I'm Rainey Aronson, Executive Producer of Frontline. Music in this episode is by Stellwagen Symphonette. The Frontline Dispatch is produced at WGBH and powered by PRX.